Chapter 4. The weekend is quiet. Veronica works with her father on a missing persons case, works a shift at the Java Hut, and does her homework. She spends Saturday night at Logan's and hangs out with Wallace and Mac on Sunday afternoon. It's peaceful, which she's grateful for. As soon as she gets to school Monday morning, she can feel the buzz of tension, which means there's a hot rumor going around. This could be absolutely anything, but with Meg pregnant, she's a little bit on the wary side. At least one or two people at Styles' party had probably figured it out, both from her refusal of any alcohol and the fact that she wouldn't play chicken. The thought that someone there might have betrayed her trust worries her. She wants details, so she sends Wallace to snoop around for her with some of his basketball and cheerleader friends. When he rejoins her at her locker after second period, he looks unexpectedly sober, and Veronica's stomach tightens. "What? What is it?" she asks. "I guess Dick told a bunch of guys about Styles' scars," Wallace says. "They're all talking about how he's some kind of freak who gets off on hurting himself." "Oh, crap," Veronica breathes out. That hadn't occurred to her. Why hadn't that occurred to her? Dick is an idiot with a big mouth. She should have thought to have Logan tell him not to say anything about it, or at least warn Styles. She realizes, with a knot of dread forming in her stomach, is that her next class is one she shares with Styles and Lydia. "Yeah, and you know the way rumors blow out of proportion in this place," Wallace says. "I mean, I saw those scars. Yeah, they were bad, but the guys out there are making it sound like he carved satanic rituals into his skin or some shit like that." "Okay, I better go talk to him," Veronica says. She shoves her books into her bag and heads for her class. Styles is already in the classroom. He looks up when she comes in, but then looks back down at where he's texting. She sits down next to him. She can't help but notice now that there's a multitude of thin white scars on his forearm. They hadn't been there before. Or, more likely, he'd been wearing some kind of concealer that he's now washed off. "Styles, I..." she says. He lifts a hand up to stop her. A rather imperious gesture that takes her aback. But he takes a deep breath and says, "I'm not angry at you, Veronica, but I need a little time to deal with this before I'll be ready to talk to you. Is that okay?" Veronica swallows and then nods. "Yeah, that's okay." She gets up and goes to her own seat. She's actually a little surprised by how upset she is about this. It's not just that she was starting to consider Styles a friend. It's that she knows what he's gone through. He's one of the few people she's ever met who would actually understand her. Logan drops down in the seat next to her. "You okay?" he asks. "I don't think I am," Veronica says with a sigh. Then class starts and she's forced to pay attention. She has study hall next, but Styles asks Mr. Wu for a library pass and leaves just as Veronica's sitting down. Scott and Erica are there, and they say hello to her in a manner that's more civil than friendly, but at least it isn't hostile. Veronica meets up with the others at lunch. Styles' friends have chosen their usual tables, but Styles isn't there. "I can't even imagine how awful he feels," Meg says, looking sadly at the empty seat. "I know what it's like to have everyone at school talking about you like that." "I think we all do," Veronica says. She looks up at Logan and says, "Does Dick even realize how much of an asshole he is?" "Nope," Logan says. "I wonder if he went home," Wallace says. "Styles, I mean, not Dick." Dick is nowhere to be seen. But that's only because he almost always leaves campus at lunch to visit Del Taco or Burger King or whatever strikes his fancy.
"I don't think so," Duncan says,
and gestures, because there's Styles. He's coming out of the cafeteria with a full tray of food, like usual.
But one thing is definitely not usual. He's shirtless. He's wearing jeans and a pair of sunglasses, but nothing else. Veronica, who hadn't really gotten a good look at the scars at the party, can't help but stare. Everyone else is, too, except for Styles' friends. They just go on eating their lunches like this isn't at all weird. "Oh, hey, can I grab that?" Styles says, leaning over Shelley Pomery to grab the salt shaker off her table. She flinches back as his abdomen crosses right in front of her face. "Hey, that looks good. Mind if I try it?" he adds at another table, where Carrie Bishop is sitting. Veronica is impressed. Styles has already figured out who the worst gossips are. He leans over Carrie and picks a French fry up off her tray. "Is he drunk?" Meg asks in a low voice. "His coordination is way too good," Veronica says, as Styles continues through the crowd, for all the world oblivious to his audience. He steps up on one of the benches and actually walks through a table to get to his own. Then, instead of sitting down so he's facing the others, he sits on the table itself, facing outwards, so everyone can keep staring. "Honey Badger just don't give a fuck," Wallace says, nodding in admiration. From their interaction earlier, Veronica knows that Styles does indeed give a fuck, but he's certainly making it look like he doesn't. She gives him a little smile. He smiles back and salutes her. The rest of his friends go on eating their lunches as if nothing has changed. "Put a shirt on, fag!" someone yells. She thinks it's Tad. Breaking up with Carmen hadn't improved him very much. "Why? You don't like what you see?" Styles asks, blowing him a kiss. Before a fight can break out, two teachers make their way into the courtyard. One of them frowns at Styles. "Why aren't you wearing a shirt?" she asks. "Why not?" Styles asks whimsically, aware that everyone in the courtyard is staring at him. "Because you have to wear one," she says. Styles shrugs. "I'm working on my tan." The teacher frowns at him. "Okay, come with me. We are going to the principal's office. Right now, get your things." Styles leaves his stuff, knowing that the others will collect it for him. But before leaving, he turns back to the courtyard and says, "Thank you, Neptune. I'll be here all semester." Then he turns and goes inside. Veronica excuses herself hastily and goes out to her car. She hasn't used her little bug in Clemens' office in a really long time, but she's sure she doesn't want to miss this. Not just because of her curiosity, because she wants to be sure that Styles is okay. By the time she gets out to her car and has the radio turned to the right frequency, Styles is already in Clemens' office, and Clemens is saying, "And what's your sudden aversion to your shirt, Mr. Stalinsky?" "The entire school was talking about my scars because Dick Casablancas told them I was a freak who liked to carve symbols into his stomach or some shit like that," Styles says, his tone matter-of-fact. "Since they all seemed to want to see them so badly, I decided to give them a good look." Clemens sighs. "I'm willing to cut you some slack because you're new here. If you put on a shirt, go back to class, and keep it on for the rest of the day, we'll let this go without disciplinary action. But I will have to call your father." "Go right ahead," Styles says. "I already texted him to let him know you'd be giving him a ring. He knows about the scars. I have a therapist. She knows about them too. It's all good."
"Okay."
Clemens' shooing motion is silent, but Veronica can practically see him making it. "Go on. Get to class."
"Yes, sir."
There's the noise of a door opening and then closing. Then nothing but silence for a long minute. Then Clemens on his phone. The mic isn't good enough to pick up both halves of the conversation, so she can only hear Clemens.
"Hi, Sheriff Stalinsky, please. Van Clemens at Neptune High. He should be expecting my call."
Another long silence.
"Yes, Sheriff, thank you. Yes, he said he had notified you."
"Uh-huh.
Shirtless. Yes, I will talk to the other student,
but my concern here is... Okay. Yes. But you understand I had to make sure you were aware, given the nature... Thank you. I appreciate that. No, I told him we would let it slide, since it's obvious he was provoked. Okay. Yes, I'm sure. Goodbye.
Disappointing, Veronica thinks. But in a way, disappointing is good. Styles isn't in trouble. Dick won't get in trouble either, if only because he's too stupid to realize why what he did was wrong. There's no point in waiting around to hear that conversation, so Veronica heads back inside the school. Her last three classes are uneventful. She sees Styles last period, but doesn't try to talk to him. She follows him out, but not because she's actively following him. There are only so many routes from the classroom to the parking lot. She sees the black Camaro pulled up again, with Derek leaning against the hood, and watches from a distance as Styles walks over and wraps his arms around Derek's waist. Watches Styles press his cheek into Derek's chest and close his eyes. Derek holds onto him like that for almost a full minute before he lets go, then leans over and kisses Styles on the crown of his head. They exchange a few quick words before Derek opens the car door and Styles slides inside, out of Veronica's view. Given the events of the day, Styles is not in the best of moods to be entertaining visitors. Unfortunately, he takes his position as sheriff's son pretty seriously, and this is a town where appearance and influence matters. So as tempted as he is to just ignore the doorbell when it rings, he doesn't. The house is pretty quiet at the moment. Styles had wanted space. After what had happened at school, he felt smothered, claustrophobic. The pack is all familiar with this mood, and by now, they always pick up on it. So they've made themselves scarce. Scott and Allison have gone out on a Monday afternoon date to a vintage ice cream parlor. Lydia was staying after school for one of those business club meetings that Styles finds so patently ridiculous. Danny's at school, too. Not because of the business club, but because he and Mac are working on some computer thing together. The two of them have already hit it off like peas in a pod, despite their very different personalities. This is the first time each of them have had someone who understands their geek language. Boyd and Isaac have gone to the library. They've found in recent months that this is a bonding experience, since both of them love books, but have never had the money to purchase whatever they wanted. Neptune's library is bigger than Beacon Hill's, although Isaac says the selection in certain genres is poor. Erica has stayed home, because she doesn't like to leave Styles when he's like this, but she's out in the backyard sunbathing, giving him all the space he needs. Styles is somewhat surprised that she hasn't already burned to a crisp, given how much sunbathing she's been doing since their arrival in Neptune. Derek is home as well, perched in his usual spot on the kitchen counter with his sketchbook while Styles is doing some elaborate cooking project that involves marinating steaks in 8 different marinades. There will be blind taste testing later, Styles has informed them. He really should be doing his homework. Despite how ridiculous some of the offered classes are, Styles' academic schedule is no joke. But he's too tense and edgy to focus on it right now. Derek already knows he has a not-so-secret plan to take some Adderall in the evening, and then stay up late to do the homework. It's not something he approves of, but there's only so far he can get with Styles. "I don't even know why it bothers me so much," Styles says, as he vigorously mixes honey into soy sauce. "I mean, it's so ridiculous to be upset about it, because it's not self-harm, you know? So why the fuck should I care if people think it is?" Derek doesn't really have a good answer for that, but he says, "Maybe because they were assholes about it?" "Yeah, maybe," Styles says. "Like, it's a good thing I'm really not a depressive cutter, because if I was, I'd be slitting my wrists right now. Jesus, what's wrong with the people in this town?" Derek gives a little shrug. He's about to say something else when the doorbell rings. Styles sighs, surveys his project, and says, "I guess I'd better go see who that is."
He looks down at his apron, which reads, "Kiss the fucking cook," in bold black letters, and slides it over his head. He tosses it onto a chair and heads for the door with Derek on his heels. The man at the door is vaguely familiar, in an "I've seen you in photographs, but never met you" sort of way. Medium height with tanned skin, dark hair, and perfectly white teeth in what looks like a permanent smile from the creases near his eyes. He offers that smile now.
"You must be Styles. I've heard so much about you."
"You have the disadvantage of me," Styles says, offering his hand.
"Woody Goodman," the man says, shaking it vigorously, like they're old frat brothers. "Mind if I step in for a minute?"
Styles does a quick mental visitation of the foyer and living room. Allison was cleaning her guns on the coffee table. Nobody's vacuumed since Saturday, so there are clumps of fur on the cushion. He's pretty sure that Erica's bra and skirt are draped over the back of the sofa.
How about I step out?" he asks. "The house is kind of messy."
"Sure, sure," Woody says, still smiling broadly. He catches sight of Derek and offers his hand.
"Woody Goodman, county supervisor."
Derek shakes it, but looks somewhat reluctant about it.
"Derek Hale, I'm a friend of Styles."
"It's good to finally meet you," Woody says. "Hey, I was really hoping to catch your dad. I stopped by the station and they said he was out in the field. I thought he might be here."
"Why would he be here if he was out in the field?" Styles asks, frowning slightly.
"Well, not to be indelicate, but I guess you had some trouble at school today," Woody says. "My daughter Gia is in your class. She may have mentioned something. She's a talker, that Gia. Anyway, I thought maybe he had come home to check on you and I could catch him here."
"Oh," Styles says. "Well, I talked to him on the phone earlier and he said he wouldn't be home until around 6. I think he was checking into some carjacking ring or something."
"That's our new sheriff," Woody says,
with more enthusiasm than Styles can possibly believe is warranted.
"All about the job. Okay, no problem. I'll talk to him later. But hey, since I'm here, no use in underestimating the new generation. Have you heard about incorporation at all?"
No, Styles says. He immediately wishes he had said yes, because Woody launches into what's obviously a prepared spiel about how much he thinks Neptune would benefit from becoming incorporated, and what a great idea it would be, and how he's going to start campaigning for it, and he would really like the sheriff's support. It lasts almost 10 minutes, despite Styles' increasingly impolite attempts to disentangle himself. Goodman appears completely oblivious to the fact that Styles really doesn't give a shit. And Styles thinks that this probably makes him a great politician, but also harder to get rid of than a Jehovah's Witness. Meanwhile, Derek is standing right behind Styles, shifting from foot to foot. Something about the situation is making him desperately uncomfortable, and Styles really has no idea what. Derek is easy for him to read. His body language alone gives away volumes to those who know him well, along with his scent and the feel of him down the bond that links them together. Styles finally resorts to, "Oh my gosh, I left the oven on. Do you smell something burning?" in order to get rid of the perky, persistent county supervisor. Woody shakes his hand again, then tries to shake Derek's, but Derek already has one broad hand locked around Styles' upper arm and is towing him back into the house. "I'll tell my dad you stopped by," Styles calls out as Derek physically slams the door in Woody's face. There's a moment of silence afterwards.
"Wow," Styles finally says.
"Wow. What the fuck was that?" Derek gives a little snarl. "I don't like him," he says.
"Yeah, I could tell," Styles says.
He heads back into the kitchen and surveys the ingredients, trying to remember where he was in the process.
"I'll grant that he sure as hell can't take a hint, but you seemed ready to claw his face off."
"I just didn't like him."
Derek says. He goes to the sink and starts washing his hands to scrub off the scent that Woody's handshake left on him. I don't want him touching you or anyone else in the pack. I don't want him in the den.
Newsflash for you, Derek, Stiles says. Nobody is coming into the den. It looks like a fucking den. Nobody from Neptune is getting invited over here again. Ever.
Derek relaxes a little, although his spine is still ramrod straight. It was just something about him. I can't put my finger on it. Stiles gives a little shrug.
He's a snake oil salesman. Everything he does is calculated and insincere. Of course you don't like him. I don't like him either.
I guess you're right. Derek sighs a little. He goes over to rub his cheek against Stiles' hair, and then says, Ew, you still smell like him. Wash up.
Sir, yes, sir, Stiles says, amused, heading for the sink.
Veronica is relieved beyond words the next day when Stiles greets her with his usual amount of cheer, as if nothing had happened the previous day. He tells her about Woody's visit and his spiel about incorporation, which his father had said he thinks is a really bad idea. Woody will be terribly disappointed if he expects the sheriff's support. Veronica concurs with Sheriff Stilinski's conclusion. They chat about that, and about Scott and Danny having made the lacrosse team, and Lydia's decided to join the Future Business Leaders of America thing. Veronica's glad they're settling in, and that there will be another girl in the FBLA. She starts telling him about the case she's currently working on for her father, some woman who is absolutely nuts about her fiancé. Literally. So then she asks, what comes after the platinum package? Veronica says, trying not to laugh as she and Stiles walk out to the parking lot after their last class. And I was so flustered, I actually said, the psycho package? I mean, what? She called me at 3 o'clock in the morning. And that, my friend, is one of the perils of private investigation.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna stick with actual law enforcement, Stiles says.
I respect what you and your dad do, but there's way too much underwear sniffing, Veronica says.
Yeah, Stiles says with a snort. I don't think I could ever be a typical cop, like my dad. I'm way too jumpy for that. I'd like to do profiling or forensics, but lately I've actually really gotten into doing cold cases. That sort of shit really appeals to me.
Solving the unsolvable? Veronica asks.
Yeah, I mean, say you had never figured out what happened to Lily, and 20 years later it was still unsolved. Wouldn't it be kind of neat to take a crack at it?
If we weren't talking about my best friend's murder, sure, Veronica says. Stiles winces.
Sorry, sometimes I get insensitive about that kind of shit.
It's okay, Veronica says. She's about to say something else when they round the Jeep, and Stiles just stops dead, so abruptly that Veronica nearly walks into him.
What? She says, and then leans around him to see the car. Someone has scratched, "Go home, fag," onto the driver's side door.
Oh my God, Veronica says. Stiles is just still for a moment, although his body vibrates with tension. Then he wheels around and demands, "Are there security cameras in this parking lot?"
Veronica winces.
"No, sorry, there really should be, but..."
"Fuck this," Stiles says, pulling out his phone.
She blinks at him.
"Who are you calling?"
"I'm calling the goddamn cops," he says.
Why?
Stiles stops dialing for a moment.
"Vandalism is a crime in Neptune, isn't it?"
"Well, yeah, but..."
Veronica's at a loss as to how to explain to Stiles that that's just not how things work around here.
He's already talking into his phone.
"Yeah, I need to report a crime. Someone's vandalized my car."
"Yeah, Neptune High parking lot. Just look for the camo-colored Jeep, with the really pissed off guy standing next to it."
He hangs up and then starts to scroll through something. Then he dials again.
"Isaac, Your last class is with Danny, right? He with you? Okay, can you warn him that someone scratched Go Home Fag into my car so when he shows up, he doesn't get hit in the gut with it the way I did? Yeah, sorry. See you in a few.
You have your friend's class schedules entered into your phone? Veronica asks.
You don't?
He responds.
Here I thought we were partners in useless paranoia.
There isn't much Veronica can say to that, and before she can think of something, Scott and Allison show up, holding hands, with Boyd and Erica behind them. Scott rounds the car, takes one look at it, and says,
Uh-oh.
You are not wrong, Stiles says.
I know someone who can probably fix it for pretty cheap, Veronica offers, scanning the parking lot to see if Weevil's around anywhere.
That is so epically not the point, Stiles says. This was a custom fucking paint job that was a gift from my dad.
Are you gonna ruin somebody? Erica asks, perking up.
I'd be up for a good ruining.
Stiles is about to reply when Lydia shows up, followed only seconds later by Isaac and Danny. Isaac's clearly done his job, because Danny's jaw is tight and his shoulders are tense. He takes one look at the car and mutters, Jesus, but doesn't say anything else about it. Stiles is so furious that Danny seems strangely calm in comparison, even though he's obviously upset. Veronica pulls out her phone and texts Weevil, asking him if he's still at school and to drop by if he has a minute. Weevil hates texting, so he doesn't respond, but she guesses he's probably in the machine shop and will be there soon.
Hey, you guys don't all need to stick around, Stiles says, as Veronica's doing this. I'm going to have to give a statement and wait while the cops do their thing. You should head home.
I'm staying, Danny says firmly.
Me too, Erica says,
looping an arm around Stiles' waist. The others hem and haw and hesitate, but Stiles eventually convinces Lydia to drive home in her car and take Allison, Boyd, and Isaac with her. Scott decides he'd rather stay. By the time all this has been sorted out, a police cruiser has pulled up and a uniformed officer that Victoria knows by sight but not by name is getting out.
This the car? He asks.
You see any other cars with Go Home Fag carved into the driver's side door?
Stiles responds, but then he gets a hold of himself. Sorry, officer, Paulson, he says, after a quick glance at the name tag.
Yes, this is the car.
Mm-hmm.
The officer kneels down next to the lovely inscription and examines it for a few moments.
Well, unfortunately, there's probably not a lot we can do, he says, getting up and dusting off his knees. Pretty much every kid who goes to school here would be a suspect, so...
So?
It's Danny who loses his temper, which surprises Veronica.
This is a hate crime. You can't just brush it off with, there are too many suspects.
Officer Paulson frowns at Danny and says,
Like I said, not much we can do about it.
You're serious,
Stiles says, his voice flat.
You don't want to check for prints or anything.
Check for prints?
Paulson chuckles. Kid, you watch too much CSI. Even if we have any, none of the kids around here would be in the system.
That's just flat out untrue, since at least half the PCHers go to Neptune High.
But Veronica doesn't see much point in mentioning that. She's watching Stiles vibrate with tension and feeling a little sorry for him. Much to her surprise, he actually smiles.
Okay. That's your final answer?
Yeah, kid, Paulson says. Sorry about your car.
Okay, hang on. I'm calling my dad.
Paulson actually laughs. Kid, I don't know who your dad is, but with you driving a piece of junk like that, it's not gonna be anybody whose opinion I care about.
Weevil saunters up while this is going on, parking his motorcycle a few spaces down. He surveys the damage on the car and opens his mouth to say something. Veronica shushes him and says in a low voice,
I suspect we're not going to want to miss this.
Oh, really? Stiles says to Paulson as he presses the phone to his ear.
So if that car was vandalized, he says, gesturing to the red Porsche parked a few cars down. Would that be worth an investigation? That's interesting. Oh, hi, Dad. No, I've got a small problem. Someone's keyed Go Home Fag into the door of my car. Sheriff Stilinski says, what? So loudly that even Veronica hears him. Paulson rolls his eyes. Yeah, but see, that's not actually the problem, Stiles says. The problem is that I have this fine officer of the law telling me there ain't shit he can do about it. Uh-huh. Paulson. Yeah, I'll put him on. Stiles holds out his phone. When Paulson doesn't move to take it, Stiles feigns embarrassment and says, oh man, I forgot to introduce myself, didn't I? My name is Stiles Stilinski. My dad is your new boss. Take the motherfucking phone. There's a moment of blankness on Paulson's face before the light dawns and horror starts to bloom across it. He practically cringes as he takes the phone from Stiles' hand. Yes, sir. This is... Yes, I... Okay. Yes, sir. I... Okay. Of course. Another cringe. Yes, sir. He takes the phone away from his ear and clears his throat, holding it back out to Stiles. He wants to talk to you. Stiles takes it back.
Yeah, I'm sure.
A pause.
No, I'm not fucking okay.
Stiles stops for a moment and takes a deep breath.
But I'm handling it. I'll be fine. Yeah, I'll see you tonight.
He slides the phone into his pocket, looks at Paulson, and says,
get to work.
I need to get some stuff from my car, Paulson says, and scurries away.
Holy crap, Veronica says, fanning herself. Is that what it's like watching me at work?
Pretty much, Weevil says. Have you met your match, V? Veronica laughs. Maybe I have, she says.
Weevil, this is Stiles.
Stiles, Weevil. His uncle runs a body shop. He can maybe help you out.
Worth a discount just to see you light that guy's ass on fire, Weevil agrees, exchanging a handshake.
Won't be able to do much about the paint job, though. Custom?
Yeah, Stiles says with a sigh. Don't even worry about it. Just do it in primer and I'll get it redone the next time I have a chance to get to Beacon Hills. Which may be sooner rather than later, given my dad's reaction to this little stunt.
Weevil nods and says something about replacing a panel altogether, and the two of them talk shop for a few minutes. Erica is slowly inching around Stiles, giving Weevil an up and down glance that Veronica is starting to recognize. She's thinking about their first meeting, and Erica saying that Stiles didn't want people thinking she was a slut without having a chance to prove it first. Weevil is pretty attractive, Veronica has to admit, with his leather jacket and his motorcycle. He seems like he might be Erica's type. They won't be able to move the car for a while, since Officer Paulson is now back and carefully checking it for prints, which he almost immediately finds because rich high school kids aren't smart enough to wear latex gloves when keying a car. So Weevil and Stiles make some arrangements for him to drop it by the shop the next day.
Let me give you the address, Weevil says, patting down his pockets.
Better idea, Erica says brightly. Why don't you take me there, and then I can tell Stiles where it is later.
Weevil gives her a skeptical look. You want to see my uncle's auto shop?
Actually, I'm angling to see you without your clothes on,
Erica says in a forthright tone that has Veronica choking on her laughter.
If that's at your uncle's auto shop, okay, I'd be cool with that.
You're serious, aren't you? Weevil says. He doesn't seem quite sure what to do with someone as forward as Erica.
Oh, wait, I have to ask you one thing first, Erica says. Do you know where the clitoris is?
Well, I'm becoming increasingly interested in locating yours, Weevil tells her.
Erica grins at him.
So, are you going to show me your bike or what?
Bet your ass I am,
Weevil says, getting an arm around her waist.
Don't wait up!
Erica shouts over her shoulder at Stiles, who's shaking his head, clearly amused by her behavior. Wow, Veronica finally says. That's Erica, Stiles says, laughing. She was sick for almost her entire life. When they finally got her epilepsy under control and she stopped having seizures and being miserable, she decided to live life to the fullest. Among other things, she decided that sex is fun, she enjoys having it, and therefore sees no reason why she should be bound by other people's concepts of morals.
Good for her, Veronica says, thinking of Lily Kane, and for once, smiling at the memories.